You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Masoli going in zone. It's hot. Touchdown, Brandon Bay. Masoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Inside the 50, kick is up and it is good. That's it. The Hamilton Tiger Cats in 6 years of futility, finally winning in Vancouver.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, lots to talk about this week as always, and let's start with the game. We are sitting here for the third time in the last 4 weeks. We're talking about a Ticats win, buddy. Hamilton went into BC for a ridiculously late game that didn't kick off until 11 p.m. Hamilton time. And stunned the BC Lions on a last-second field goal to win 24-23 for their first victory in BC since Marcel Belfay was patrolling the sidelines in 2011. Our Hamilton Tigercats now sit third in the East with a 3-9 record, 5 points back of the second-place Redblacks, and 6 points back of the first-place Argos. Mike, this was a bit of a crazy game, wasn't it? But it was also a bit of a typical June Jones Ticats game, I would say. The D and the special teams played well, but the offense struggled to find a rhythm, but they did enough to get the win. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, and I really, really enjoyed watching this game. It wasn't, 51-47, but it was a very entertaining game. I thought the Ticats put a great effort forward, and the streak of 5 years is over of losing in BC, and it feels damn good to get a road win in a tough place against a Western team. It doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't, especially in BC, like you mentioned, 5 years since the team last won there. And the funny thing is, Marcel Belfay was the head coach for this team in 2009, 2010, and 2011, and they won in BC all three of those years. So it's kind of crazy that it's gone through George Cortez and then Ken Austin, and now we're with June Jones to finally get that first victory in BC in so very, very long, when it was a place for that early part of the Ticats resurgence that actually was pretty good to us.
Yeah, I do remember in that Belfay era we played very well in BC, and the last game I remember watching, I think DeAndre Cobb was playing for us, if I'm not mistaken. He might have had a big game, but either way, it doesn't matter. I'm just glad we got that win because we needed to get some wins on the road. We have a couple games left against Western teams, and to steal a win against one of those tough West teams is a big deal.
Yeah, when you look at the rest of this Ticats schedule, you see Winnipeg sitting there, you see Calgary sitting there, and with the way those two teams are playing, two best teams in the league by far, you kind of look at those and go, I don't know if the Cats are going to win those ones. And then the rest of the schedule is home or away games against East teams that they have to win. To get this win in BC, I think, is really, really big. It's not a division win, but it's one of those games that they stole. They stole this victory, and I don't mean that in that they didn't deserve to win, but you look at everything that goes into this game, late kickoff in BC where they haven't won in forever, and it's like this is a game you would have chalked up as a loss. And then to go in there and to gut out this tough, tough victory, I think it says a lot about where this team's at right now. They're obviously still very far away from being in the playoffs, but it's a team that, even though they were 0-8 at one point, we've now seen them win three of their last four. This is a team that hasn't given up. They haven't given up hope. And as a Ticat fan, that's encouraging, because I see you could easily see at 0-8 that this team could have just completely fallen on its face, but they haven't. They found a way to get three tough victories and to climb back into this playoff hunt.
Yeah, and you got to give a lot of credit to Mr. June Jones. I mean, you got to think that he's, his attitude is maybe his long time coaching university ball or college ball in the States, that rah-rah type of coach. I'm not sure if he is that or not, but he has rejuvenated this locker room and given them hope, it seems.
It sure does seem that way. Speaking of hope, Mike, let's talk about the offense. We're going to start with Alex Green, aren't we?
We are. I believe this guy was cut in training camp. Am I right?
You are indeed correct. He was one of the final cuts in training camp.
So June Jones is at has known this kid for a while. He played in Hawaii, played in the NFL for a while, but he just looked great out there. He's a quick running back. Every time he touched the ball, I mean, he had a 10.8 yard average, 140 yards on the ground on 13 carries. He was really fun to watch last Saturday night, and it makes you wonder if he's going to be the starting running back going forward, because he plays one game and he seemed to have a lot of chemistry with that offense.
Yeah, and he's fresh. He hasn't played a game since, I want to say, 2013. He's obviously hungry to still stay in the game. He thought when he was cut by the Tigers, there's a wonderful story on him on Three Down Nation that Drew Edwards did. It's, if you haven't read it, go check it out. But you can tell this guy's really taking this, what he believes, and rightly maybe believes, this is his last chance. He's 29 years old. It's kind of his last chance to be a football player, and he thought his career was over when he got cut in June. He gets this call, and he comes in and has a game like this. He was stiff-arming guys. He stiff-armed Solomon Adel-Mimian. Like, that's not something guys do. He was running over the place. He was hitting the hole hard. When he was bouncing outside, he was finding room. It's the type of running game that I haven't seen from a Ticats back in a very, very long time. That's no disrespect to CJ Gable. I'm a huge CJ Gable fan. If they could ever find a way to get both of these guys on the roster, which I know is really difficult to do, imagine that two-headed monster in the backfield. But seeing what he did against the Lions was damn impressive.
How did you like that option play early on in the game? Mazzoli just pitches it off to him, and he sprints like 20-plus yards. Yeah, I thought that play was just gorgeous.
I loved it. I thought it was great, because that's how you can use – like, take the talent you have on your team and use it to its full capabilities. We know Mazzoli can run. So if they got one defender in space and he goes after the running back, Mazzoli can run it. Now, he probably wouldn't run it for 20-plus yards, but that's the type of imaginative offense that I think this team needs, and I thought it was wonderful to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Mazzoli, he had a pretty good game. You know, his percentages were up, I believe, from the last couple games at 65.7. Two touchdown passes, no interceptions. He didn't get off to the best start, and he was a bit inconsistent throughout the game, but overall, I would give him thumbs up on this performance.
Yeah, I think we saw the Jeremiah Mazzoli we always see. He was a little more on his game in this one. Like you said, 65% completion percentage, which is by far his highest of the season. He hadn't hit, I don't think, 59% in a game in the previous three games that he had started. But you're right, no turnovers, which is awesome. And I, too, thought that this was going to go poorly. The very first play of the game, he takes the snap. He does his typical run 20 yards back to try to avoid the sack. And then he tries to make a play with his feet, and he gets sacked. And I'm thinking, oh, boy, this is going to be a long night. And then he kind of settled in. It was, I'd say the first half was a little herky-jerky. And then he had that one drive, which I believe ended in a field goal, where he went 9 of 10 and just looked on his game. And we've seen Jeremiah Mazzoli play that way. Obviously, the one that comes to mind is the record completions in a row that he set against the Eskimos last year. But that's the type of player. He doesn't need to be perfect, because you can't expect that from anyone. But he played well, and I think what complemented that was the running game. Not to get back to that, because we discussed that already, but having that running game there allowed him to see the field more, get a little more time. I just felt like the whole offense, once it started to click, really sort of came together.
And you got to think he's going to get better as the weeks go on here, gets more comfortable in this offense. And I'm really glad they didn't go back to Kolaros, to be honest, because I think they just need to stick with Mazzoli the rest of the season. From here on out, stick with Mazzoli. Let him go week by week as a starting quarterback. See if there's any progression, because you never know what's going to happen with Kolaros. If Mazzoli's the guy, give him a chance to show that he's the guy.
Mark it on your calendars, folks. Whatever time this is in the podcast, Mike is backing Jeremiah Mazzoli. This is not the same Mike we're used to hearing. Not that he was a Mazzoli hater, but you have been critical of him, and we're wondering. But you said many times, and I agree with you, didn't think that he was a starting quarterback. It's interesting, and this is how it's supposed to be. We get new information, we change our opinions. Jeremiah Mazzoli played a hell of a football game. We're allowed to change our opinions. We're not steadfast in our beliefs that this is the way it should be. things change and we change with it. So that shows some real growth on your part, sir.
Well, I remember specifically saying last week, Jeremiah Mazzoli is not a starting quarterback because he's just too inconsistent. That's exactly what I said. And it's funny because from week to week, I seem to go up and down with the win, with the loss. It's just me being a fan, being emotional about it. But right now, at this point, I am glad that they stuck with Mazzoli.
So speaking of things that look, we both have been on this show. We both had to eat some crow. I believe last week you also said that you didn't expect much out of Shamad Chambers. And no. I'm not going to say he had the greatest debut in the world, but he was pretty darn good for the Cats against BC, was he not?
He looked great out there. He 6 catches, 57 yards, 9.5 yard average. You know, the one play that impressed me is I forget when it was, but he grabbed probably a 7 yard pass. He was right by the first down marker. He kind of stopped for a second and then he just went forward, sprinted forward, got the first down and a couple more yards. So a very, very good debut for Shamad Chambers. I was really impressed with his first game as a Ticat.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, it wasn't like he didn't blow the doors off anyone. He didn't have like 10 catches for, 160 probably yards and 3 touchdowns. But if this is the type of consistency we can get out of him, 50, 60, 70 yards a game, 31 yak, like that's the type of stuff that you want to see out of a guy. Get him the ball in space, let him make a play. And like that's, as a Canadian receiver, as a guy making his debut, that to me, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it was great to see him out there. You know, it must have been his biggest game in a while because I know he hasn't put up numbers in the last couple seasons. So, you know, he's a good addition, I'd have to say. I mean, last week I said I don't think he'll do a damn thing, but he proved me wrong in this game, and I hope that he can, you know, put out 4 or 5 catches a game because that's all we really need from him.
Well, and to think of the difference between him and what we were getting with the man who replaced Mike Jones, night and day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else offensively you want to touch upon?
You know, for a while there, Mazzoli was just, every time he passed a Tasker, it was either, he threw too high or threw behind him or whatever. But in that second half, they really got a connection going, and he was the leading receiver at the end of the game. 7 receptions, 96 yards, and a very important touchdown catch. So it was great to see Luke Tasker and Mazzoli get some chemistry going in that second half.
Yeah, Tasker's been a little bit forgotten. It's a lot of Brandon Banks we saw. We saw a ton of Jalen Saunders over the last few weeks. And surprisingly, he was shut out in this game. No catches for Jalen Saunders, which is a surprise. But I'm sure if you asked him, hey, you have no catches, but the team wins, he'll say, I'll take that every week. I don't expect him to go catchless very often while he's on this team. But Luke Tasker, it was nice to see him involved. It was nice to see him be a focal point of the offense. And you bring up the big touchdown catch, which was important, and you're absolutely correct. But that third down catch, when the BC defender was draped all over him, should have been a flag for pass interference, in my opinion. But Tasker comes down with the catch, extends the drive, gets the Cats to the field goal range, and next thing you know, they leave with a victory. That was that's the Luke Tasker we used to see him making the tough catches in traffic and coming down with it. It was awesome.
Third down, needed to have that catch or the game's over. The Ticats lose again. He makes it wasn't a one-handed, Daron Carter, Brian Burnham type catch, but it was a very, very difficult catch from my perspective anyways. And just classic Luke Tasker, clutch needed to be made, and he made that play. So great to see that from him. And overall, the offensive line was really good, I thought. The Mazzoli had a ton of time back there. There was a nice pocket for most of the game. They gave up 3 sacks. But overall, I think this crew of offensive linemen, including your boy at right tackle, the rookie, I love this unit right now. I think they're just night and day from what they were in the first 8 or 9 games of the season.
Riker Matthews comes back in, Mike, and these guys are studly. Yes, they gave up 3 sacks, but look, BC's pass rush is pretty darn good. Mikhail Brooks is on there. They had Alex Bazzi back, who in his first play back in the CFL after a trip down south, sacks Jeremiah Mazzoli. Like that's a really good BC defense. And I thought, especially as the game wore on, especially with them running the football, this is the thing some people may not know. And I'm not trying to say that I am on the level of these guys, but I played football in high school. And when you run the football, the offensive linemen get to fire off and get to hit someone, and that gets them in the game. This Ticats team does not run the football a lot, so when they get the chance to do that, these guys get to get physical, they get to get in the game, and that settles them down for when they're in pass protection. And this fivesome, this quintet, we talked about it last week, we've talked about it since Labor Day. This group with Riker Matthews in there, with Washington, Bombin, Filer, and Revenberg, that's the five, man. This is the unit that I would be going with for the rest of this season and for a few seasons ahead, because I just think these guys as a unit together are phenomenal. They're not up there with the Calgarys of the league or the Winnipegs, but they don't have to be. If this offensive line went from trash to they're a little bit better than average, and that's all this team needs, because you got a quarterback back there who's fleet of foot, who can get out of the pocket and make plays with his feet. You got a running game now with Green, and hopefully if Green does get taken out and Gable comes back in, we'll see the same sort of thing. It's just the way that this offense is all coming together with everyone bringing something to it. This is what we would have loved to have seen at the beginning of the year, but we're getting it now down the stretch, and they always say it's how you play at the end of the season, not at the beginning, and the Ticats are playing some fantastic football, especially in the trenches.
Absolutely. It's just so great to see. And just another shout out to Brandon Banks. A really nice touchdown grab in the end zone for the first touchdown of the game for the Ticats. He's excelling at the receiver position. And it makes you wonder, you know, why they stuck with him so long just as a returner. But, you know, Jones comes in, sees what he can do and makes the switch. And it's been paying off.
It's funny to think that 6 weeks ago, we were having discussions about, will Brandon Banks be on this team next year? Should Brandon Banks be traded? Should Brandon Banks be cut? And now he has become an integral part of this offense. And Brandon Banks is one of those guys that's easy to cheer for. He's a small guy, probably told all his life, you can't do it. And now he's up here, not just using his speed, but now he's building a resume as a receiver. And I hope he's around for a few more years. But I think he's found that second arc of his career where he's not just going to be known as the return man. He can now become maybe not a stud number one receiver, but he can become a very good number three or four option on a team. I hope he stays in Hamilton for the long term.
Yeah, he's a great option to have to really, you know, spread that defense, make them worry about the deep ball, which helps out the other receivers. So I think it was just a brilliant move on Coach Jones's part. Now, I guess we can go to the defense. What do you got on there, Josh?
Well, there's not many individual players to single out. Unlike on offense, there were some great individual performances. This, to me, on the defensive side, was a total team effort. Richard Leonard, we could talk about, as we always do. He was solid, as he is every week. He had the only turnover in the game, the strip of Jeremiah Johnson in the second quarter. We could talk about Larry Dean. He was his usual awesome self, leading the team in tackles and all that. But this game felt to me, and I'm curious how you felt, more like everyone pitched in to get this win.
Absolutely. You're right. There wasn't one standout player. And they did give up a lot of yards to BC. But the thing was, BC would get close to the end zone and then they would shut it down. And BC would settle for threes. And that's, you know, you'd like to not have the opposition deep in the Ticats' end. But if you're going to give up points, make it three, not seven. And that's what they did all game long. And that's, you know, partially why we won this game.
Yeah, exactly. That was where I was going next, too. They did give up a lot of yards. They gave up 469 yards of offense. But when it mattered most, inside the red zone, they stiffened up. And that's to me, the story of this game from the defensive side of the ball, is BC had four trips inside Hamilton's 20-yard line and came away with just one touchdown and three field goals. In a one-score game, hell, in a one-point game, the defense holding BC out of the end zone on three trips that ended up inside Hamilton's 15, that's huge. That's absolutely massive.
Yep, that's what we weren't getting earlier on in the season, were these stops. You know, if this was, you know, week five against the BC Lions, they would have scored probably two out of three touchdowns when they were in the red zone. So to see that, to see this defense coming together as a whole is, you know, there's things to look forward to. There's things to get excited about on this team now.
Yeah, for sure. And another thing I wanted to mention, just the last little piece, because again, like I said, it's a total team effort on the defensive part, so there's not a ton to talk about. But BC's has a phenomenal group of wide receivers, and not one of those receivers really took over in this game. Jeremiah Johnson was their leading receiver with 87 yards, but 58 of those came on the game's final heart attack inducing play where Jennings drops it off and there's three Ticats swarming Johnson, and then he's
four Ticats.
He's out of it, and it's like, oh my god, they're gonna choke this away, and then there was way too much room. Ticats converge and knock him down. But he led the way with 87 yards. Like I said, 58 on the last play. Manny Arsenault had just 62 yards. Brian Burnham had 74 yards. And Chris Williams had 54. Like, that's not bad for this team, who were torched through the air back in week 2. Travis Lule threw for over 400 yards. The Lions put up 41 points. To get this week four is what I meant. Jeez, misspoke. Sorry. For this total reversal, Jonathan Jennings did have 345 yards through the air, which is a lot. But to see these stud BC receivers not put up massive numbers shows you how far this defense has come, and shows you the change that was made. For all the love we have for Jeff Reinbold, Philip Lawley is coming on this defense, and you can see the difference in what they were. Look, they played the same opponent twice, and look at the difference in not just outcome, but in stats as well. It's been an impressive turnaround. This team's not allowing 30 plus points a game anymore. They're stiffening up when they need to. It's a very classic bend but don't break defense. We talked about it last week, but if they bend and don't break like this, allowing one touchdown and four trips inside the red zone, and keeping these stud receivers like Burnham and Arsenault and the guys that they'll face around the league the rest of the season in check, Ticats are going to win more than a few football games going down the stretch here.
Yep, and with Jennings' numbers, 345 yards, yes, but no touchdowns. He didn't have any interceptions either, but zero touchdowns. So that helps his team out so much. And I'd just like to touch on, if you're done with the defense, are you done with the defense here, Gash?
I am indeed. We can move on.
Okay. So I'd like to, I kind of was a little hard on Castillo on Twitter during the game. He missed a field goal, and he was laughing about it, and I don't know. I was a little upset because I was mad, and it seemed like he wasn't, but he completely redeemed himself, obviously made two huge field goals, and I just like to say to Sergio, I am sorry.
Yeah, that's the big story from this is going to be Sergio Castillo, I think. He, like you said, he misses the two field goals. I saw the comment on Twitter. I was going to roast you for it, but I decided, you know what? No, it's late. I'm tired. Mike's a buddy. I understand where he's coming from, because you see it and you're like, that's kind of weird. I don't know if you saw his interview after the game. He was asked about it, and he said it wasn't so much that he was smirking and laughing. He was like having a good time. It was more like, are you kidding me? Like, it's the one he clanked off the post. And he was more just like, of course this is going to happen to me. Like, it was one of those things where we've all been there. So obviously he comes back and makes a big kick at the end, and all is forgiven, right?
Absolutely. That wasn't a short kick, and he nailed it and got the win for the Ticats. So I did think that he was smirking after that second miss too, but it's all in the past. It's all good.
How do you feel about him though? Because I watched this guy now. We've had him all season, and this is the most confident that I have felt in a kicker in a very long time, with the exception of Justin Medlock, who every time he went out there, I expected him to make it. It's finally like the non-Justin Medlock division. This is the first time I don't know how long that I see they tried out for a field goal, and I think he's going to make this. Like, the two misses in this game were an anomaly. Like, that was a surprise. Brett Maher last year started off great, tailed off at the end. So there was always a general uneasiness with him last season, and I thought the same thing. Castillo misses those two, and I was thinking, and I might have even mentioned it on Twitter, oh my god, is he going to go into a Brett Maher-like slide here? And then he gets the field goal, I think it was a 53-yarder at the end of the half. And it's like, okay, he hits that tie ball game. Then he comes and he hits another big one. It's like, okay. And then he gets a shot to hit the game winner. And it was absolutely – like, I had no doubt in my mind that he was going to nail it. And that's – it's so much more calming for a fan to say the team's got to go out there and get a 40-some-odd yard field goal for the win. He's going to make it, no problem. Don't even have to look. And that's the confidence that he has kind of instilled in the fan base, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And even 55 yards, 50, this guy has a leg on him, and I am confident that he will make that 55, 56-yard field goal, because we've seen him do it this year. So, yeah, I was a little hard on him, but I am still very high on Castillo. He's had a hell of a season.
Sticking with special teams, man, how about those coverage units for this squad? Oh. They gave up 47 yards on 8 total returns to Chris Rainey. That might not sound like much, but Chris Rainey is the most dangerous kick returner in this league still. And to hold him, he had 5 kickoffs returns for 30 yards, 6 yards per kickoff. Like, that's insane. He had 3 punt returns for just 17 yards. Like, this team absolutely kept him in check, and they didn't allow him to pick up good field position, and that forces the lines in a lot. Like, this, I talked about the defense, and that was a total defensive effort, but this special teams unit added, like, this was a total team effort win. And the coverage units, which never get any publicity, deserve major kudos for the job they did in this one.
Yeah, I was very impressed with them. Like you said, Chris Rainey is just a danger every time he touches the ball, and they neutralized him completely in this game. So big thumbs up to the coverage units. And Altman had a pretty good game again, too. On kickoff returns, he had an average of 21 yards. And I just like the way he returns kicks. He hasn't broken like a huge touchdown or anything, but he seems to get positive yards, whether it's 10, 15, 20, every time he touches the ball on a return. So to have him back there is another good move by Coach Jones.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers right here. On punt returns, his long return was 16. On kickoffs, his long was 24. You go over to Rainey. On punts, Rainey's longest was 12. And on kickoffs, his longest was 13. So it's like, you look at that, and I loved Altman back there as the return man. It's he does, like you said, he gets the ball, he finds the hole, and he hits it. And he's not dancing around. And that worked for Speedy B all those years ago when he was by far the fastest guy in the field. You've seen a little less of that near the tail end of last year and into this season. But Altman's a different guy. He's probably never going to really break the big one. Or maybe he will. He could obviously have it. But it's more that he's not putting the team in bad situations. He's catching the punt. He's going forward. And he's picking up positive yards. That is something that this team has, I think, desperately needed. They need more stability on the return game, not so much flash.
Yeah, they need better field position to get this offense going. So, and Albin's obviously a bigger guy than Banks, so he's going to bounce off tacklers better than Banks would. So, I really like that guy back there. I mean, he showed some things when he was a receiver earlier on in the season too, and now he's getting to show that he can do returns. So, he's just a talented player all around, I'd say.
Okay, last thing, the onside kick call. The Ticats score that early touchdown. They go for the onside kick. It is ultimately unsuccessful. What did you think of it? Did you like it? Did you not like it? What are your thoughts?
I like it. I like the gutsiness of it. I like at the time of the game that it was done, you know, really early on. I just think it's, somewhat of a how should I say this, a cowboy move by a head coach, you know, just trying to get some momentum for this team, even though they just scored a touchdown. You know, if they recover that, which they almost did, I believe the ball went 10 yards and the Ticats, one Ticat player got his hands on it and it kind of, you know, fell away from him. But overall, I like the call. If it would have worked, it would have been a great field position and we would have had the ball back and had a chance to put more points on the board. It didn't work in the end, but that's just the way it goes sometimes.
I'm going to date myself here, but I'm going to use a Herm Edwards reference. You play to win the game. And that's what the Ticats were doing. They were playing to win. They weren't playing not to lose. And that might not sound like a big difference, but it is a big difference. The Ticats went out there and did something and called a play trying to steal a possession and win the football game. I will never, ever knock that. It was ultimately unsuccessful. The Lions actually took that drive and went and scored a touchdown and took the lead 8-7 off that onside kick, but I still do not at all think that they should go against that. I thought it was a great call. If it would have worked, they would have looked like geniuses, but I support coaches taking more chances and trying to win the game. That was if they do this in the future, you're gonna see it be successful eventually, and I love they tried it here and I hope they try it again.
Yeah, that's something that we've seen in the past when Reinbold was running the special teams. You know, they would take chances. They would do the onside punts and just creative play calls in special teams. So it's nice to see some of that come back to the team.
All right, Mike, it is now time for you to pick our glorious player of the week for this game against the Lions.
for the player of the game this week, I got to go with Alex Green. You know, this kid came – well, he's not even a kid, really. He's 29 years old. He's been in football for a long time. He's been out of football for a couple years now. His first game back, and he just lit it up. 13 carries, 140 yards. He made this offense turn in this game, and he's getting my player of the game for this week. What a performance by him.
There was no one else who could have taken this. There were a lot of good performances in this game. There was only one great one, and that was Alex Green. So, yeah, Mike, this was a no-brainer pick for you this week, which is good, because a lot of times when it's been your choice to pick this, we've skipped it because the team has crapped the bed. It's nice to see them show up, win a game, be in a game, and have a performance like Green's for you to be able to actually pick someone this time. So, absolutely, 100% agree with your pick on that one, sir. The game is in the rearview mirror. Let's talk about some news that happened with this team. There's a couple of things to talk about. We'll get the littler stuff out of the way first because I think we're going to have a bit of a big discussion on the second point. Ticats released a couple players last week. They released defensive back Tristan Dauphin and linebacker Frank Renaud. They both had recently re-signed with the team. They brought him in. Guess they never found a spot for him. Then they made the trade for Chambers and they brought other guys in. So some guys had to go. These guys never really played a game for the team, so it's not a huge loss, but it always sucks when guys get cut. And yeah, I just wanted to give them their due and shut them out, and maybe they can continue their careers elsewhere and contribute there, but they won't be doing that with the Hamilton Tiger Cats going forward.
Yeah, were they one of the Canadians that they signed recently, like the slew of Canadians?
No? I believe they were in that bunch, yeah.
Yeah, it always sucks when someone loses their job, but yeah, hopefully someone will pick them up and they'll have a good career. Not too good of a career because we don't we don't want one to slip through our fingers. But best of luck to them.
Now the big news of the week is: could this season get any worse for Mike Jones? After we recorded last week, news came out that he had failed a drug test, and then it came out that he was suspended for 2 games for violating the league drug policy. He tested positive for, and I'm going to try my best to say this, dehydrochloromethyl testosterone, which is also known as oral turinabol or oral T. And apparently this was something that was very prevalent when the East German Olympic teams were doping back in the 1970s and 80s. So this goes back a long, long way. He was suspended for 2 games. He missed this past week's game in BC, and he will miss this week's upcoming game against the Toronto Argonauts. But man, oh man, I don't know if this season could get any worse for Mike Jones.
No, such high expectations from the fan base and from us at the start of the season. You know, you thought maybe this kid would come into his own. You know, he's been starting most of the season, and he's had his troubles with drops and fumbles, and yeah, it just keeps getting from bad to worse for this guy. You know, I don't know what exactly that drug is, but obviously he shouldn't have been taking it, and he got busted for it. So I hope he can regroup, get his career back in order, and because the kid does have talent. He's a good prospect, but he just needs to get his head straight, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. I saw some people online after this came out saying, cut him, let him go, we don't have time for this. And that, you don't do that. You don't kick someone when they're down. He's had his ups and downs. He looked great at the beginning of the season, and then things just kind of took a turn for the worse. And this is obviously, I would think, rock bottom for him as a professional, this getting suspended for taking a performance-enhancing substance. But he was a second or third round pick, I don't remember which, just 2 years ago. This is not someone that you just toss out like a baby with the bathwater. You keep this guy around. He's now not going to have the weight of being a starter on his back. Andy Fantuz is close to returning. Shamad Chambers is obviously a starter, so he gets to have more of a complementary role. Maybe he gets to go on special teams and coverage units and make his hay there and build his confidence back up. But the people out there who are saying, let him go, You don't do that with a kid like this. He's still young. He's going to make mistakes. As long as they learn from the mistakes, I'm fine with it. This type of stuff happens. I'm not going to kill the guy because he failed one drug test. But hopefully he learns from the mistake, turns his career around, and we can have a very productive player for the Hamilton Tiger Cats for years to come.
Yeah, hopefully he can take a look from the sidelines, you know, learn from other people. And maybe he was thrown into the fire too quickly. And he just needs some time to adjust the professional game and take a look at it from the sidelines.
Okay, so let's talk some CFL news. And the biggest news of the week, Mike, is the Canadian Football League has a video game. Kinda-ish. Yeah. Video game-ish. They released this app game last week, CFL Football Frenzy. It's an arcade-style game for iOS devices, so iPhones, iPads, Mac stuff, you know, the Apple products. Apparently, according to the press release, the game is aimed at 8 to 14-year-olds. It's not a complex game at all. It's very rudimentary. Mike and I talked about this before we hit the record button today. I have an iPhone, so I have had a chance to play it. Mike, however, is an Android user and has not, so I'm not going to ask you what you think of it. If you don't mind, I will just tell you how I think of it. Is that okay?
Yep, go ahead, buddy.
So I've played quite a bit, and meh is kind of the word that I would use. It's a very rudimentary game, which I think is fine. And games, like, you play matchups, so it's like you play, like, it literally is the team schedule, two preseason games and then 18 regular season games, and games take maybe 3 to 5 minutes to play, and then once you get the hang of it, like how things work, the game is pretty easy to play. It's got the CFL field and all that stuff, and that's accurate. It does have a CFL field, larger end zones, wider stuff, all that sorts of good stuff. But the game's played more as like an overtime format in the CFL. It's like you've played a whole game, like the game's been played before you start, and you go to overtime tied 0-0 because your offense starts at the 35-yard line, and then you got to score a touchdown, and you have to go for 2 points after you score a touchdown, just like in overtime. And then it flips, and you play on defense, or if you played on you can play offense or defense first. It's really random as to what the decision is. And then when it flips and you're on defense, the opposing team starts 35. They try to score, and then you do that twice, and then the game is over. And this is where I had some issues with the game, mostly with the artificial intelligence of it, because regardless of the score, your opponent will kick a field goal on third down every time. Like, I've had games where I've been up 8-1 because I scored a touchdown, got 2-point convert, and the opposing team missed their field goal and got the rouge. So it'll be 8-1, it'll be third down and 5, and instead of going for it, the defense will kick the field goal, and it's like you get a second chance with the ball to pad your lead, but you know you've won the game. Because now, even if they hit it, it's 8-4, the game's over. That was a problem with me. The defense is kind of just there to be there because there's no way to intercept a pass or force a fumble or get a sack. So you're playing defense, but it's not really a defense. There's no kickoffs. Like I said, every possession starts from the 35. It's a fine game, but I don't think it's one that people will play for a very long time. Like, it's reaching a market that's kind of starved for, oh, I'm playing a CFL game. And don't get me wrong, it's cool. Play as the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You're Zach Caleros. You're throwing to Brandon Banks. And you're throwing to Luke Tasker. And you're running the ball with CJ Gable. And that's all cool and stuff. But there's not a lot to it. So once you kind of get through it and beat the game, and you can, like, unlock different uniforms. Like, you can dress your player up as a shark. Because there's, like, an avatar. Like, you create a player. You can pick whatever number you want, your skin tone, all that sorts of stuff. And then you unlock these card packs, and they have things like special things you can do in the game, like give your guys a speed boost or freeze the defense, which is literally a snowflake. And then the defense runs a lot slower, so it's easier for you to score, stuff like that. And then you get these different costumes. There's one that looks like Tron from the movie Tron. There's a shark one. There's like a Viking one. There's a I want to say there's a pirate one. Like, there's a bunch of different ones, and it's cool. Like, again, I can see how this is aimed at children because they would find that interesting. I don't necessarily find dressing my team up as sharks and playing to be all that much fun, but that's me. I'm a 35-year-old man. That doesn't really appeal to me, but, like, I get it. Like, you can play it, and you're playing as these players, and that's cool, but I'm calling this a toilet game because it's one of those games that you're going to keep on your phone just because it's like, yeah, it's kind of neat. But after a couple of weeks, you're going to stop playing it a lot, and that's going to be one of those things where you're on the toilet looking for something to do while you poop. Oh, I'll play it, because you can literally play it in 5 minutes, and then you're done. And it is a video game, and that's nice, but I don't think this satisfies the hunger of CFL fans. When it comes out for the Android, I want to talk about it again and get your thoughts on it, but that's kind of my, you know, 5 to 5 minute little review of it. It's fun, but not all that much to it.
Yeah, it's a start, I suppose. I'm glad that they did it. It's a good idea, get an app out there, maybe you know, kids will play it and get interested in watching the CFL. I like the idea. I'm still hungry for a full-on game, you know, on a console, a PS4, an Xbox. I wasn't able to play the Canadian football game that was released earlier this season because they don't have an Xbox and it's only on Xbox. So I haven't been able to play that, and I haven't been able to play the CFL football frenzy. So they just don't like me. I've been wanting to play a CFL video game since I was, you know, 7 years old or whatever, and they just won't allow me to do it. But yeah, I like the direction they're going. I hope they can, in the future, find a way to put together a game that is a full-on console game, that is full-on realistic CFL football that will make us proud. You know, I don't want them to rush it, so I understand why it's not out yet. But eventually, I would love to see that.
What I'm hoping that we'll get from this, if anything, is the CFL will get numbers on how many people want to play a CFL video game, how many downloads this thing does. Because if they see numbers in the millions, that justifies putting the money into building a game for a home console or a computer. You know what I mean? Like, I hope people download it. I might be the lone wolf here and don't have fun with it. But the more that people download it, maybe that'll push the CFL into the realm of making a much more Madden-type simulation console game. So there will be good that come from this, I hope. And again, it's not like utter trash. It's just you can definitely tell it's made for children, and it just doesn't have a ton of replay value. The big thing that I think we're going to play these things on iPads and tablets and cell phones. Multiplayer, where you can sign in, log on to a server and play your friends. How fun would it be for me and you to sit there? You're in Edmonton, I'm in Hamilton, and we're playing a game on our phones against one another. That'd be awesome. I wish that something like that would be, and maybe they'll come up with updates later and they'll figure that out. But that, to me, in this era of online gaming, that's maybe the biggest miss. I'm not a big online game guy. I'm not even really a big video game guy, to be honest with you, anymore. But if I'm playing a game on my phone, it'd be awesome for me to play with my friends and to play with people. We know a lot of people that love the CFL around here. Thanks to doing a show like this, we've met and talked to fans from around the league. How fun would it be to set up like a little mini league with one person in each city and you kind of play like a season, or I don't know what you could. There's so many things you could do even with such a game like this that I think they missed an opportunity there. A multiplayer thing would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. They're just, you know, challenging people on Twitter and all the CFL fans that we follow and follow us. It'd be a great time. And to me, the answer to the console gaming thing is an add-on to Madden. Get EA Sports to do it, and maybe you could, you know, for an extra $10 or whatever, get the add-on with the CFL game in there. I think that would be great, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
Well, we got something now in CFL Football Frenzy, so we'll have to see what the future holds for video games and the CFL in the future. Let's get into this upcoming game, Mike. The Ticats are playing the Argos, and this is always a big game, but it's an especially big game now because every game for this team is basically a playoff game. And this one Saturday night at Tim Hortons Field against the Argos is about as big as it gets, because the Ticats loss here puts them 8 points behind the Argos with 5 games left to play. And it also gives the Argos the season series this year, meaning the Ticats would have to run the table and have the Argos go winless to catch them in the standings. We mentioned a little bit earlier the Ticats schedule coming up. So with games against both Winnipeg and Calgary still on the docket, and they come in the next 2 weeks after this game, I might add, it's unlikely that this team will go on a 5-0 run to end the season. So this game holds a major significance to the Ticats' playoff chances. We've seen some stuff that we haven't liked about this team. We've seen some stuff that we have liked over the last 4 games. And so, like, what stuff that we like must this team do to get this win and creep even further back into this playoff hunt, Mike?
Keep implementing more plays into the offense, because you know that they didn't right off the bat when June Jones came in. They were kind of simplified everything. And I believe, you know, I assume that they're putting plays in week by week. Like that option play that we saw, we didn't see that before, and they worked magnificently. So this offense just needs to keep progressing, keep that running game going. If Alex Green can have, you know, another big game, that's going to help out this offense tremendously. If he gets, you know, 80, 90 yards, he doesn't have to get 140 again. But if he can contribute to this offense, you know, we're going to have a shot at this. I'm not positive we're going to get the win, but if this offense performed like it did against BC, I think we're going to have a chance.
Well, and that's the thing about this team is that because they made that coaching change and because June Jones had virtually zero resume in the CFL and he's an offensive mind, they can kind of surprise teams with what they do. You bring up the option play. No one saw that coming. They've established a running game, which no one would have thought would ever have happened if Ken Austin had stayed head coach. So, like, things – they can do things that teams aren't expecting because there's really no film or any big resume on Jones that you can go, oh, he likes to do this or he likes that. You could know what he did in college and know what he did 25 years ago in the NFL when he was a coach. But now it's he's in a new league. He's finding his feet, and it seems like – they're getting better every week, and they are implementing new things. So I think that's a really great observation. If they can do some stuff that the Argos aren't expecting, they could be really successful.
Yeah, and I just want to say I like this new coach. I know that he wanted to bring in that other coach, and that was a very bad idea, but he seems like a humble guy. You know, he listens to the players. He seems friendly with the media. So, like, I'm a big fan of June Jones at this moment.
Yeah, me too. I watch a lot of the post-game interviews that Drew posts on 3Down, and he seems, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way whatsoever, kind of aw shucks, golly gee.
Yeah.
Like, he's just so light.
Seems down to earth.
Yeah,
to earth,
like, right? He seems like one of those guys who, if you saw him at a bar and said, hey, buddy, what are you drinking? Let's have a drink, and let's talk about this game that's on TV. He'd do it. And I'm not saying that Ken Austin's way was wrong, because this team had a lot of success under Ken Austin, but This is a 180 from him, so it's a different look, and I think that that's sort of helped this team turn this thing around.
Right, and I agree with you. Not that Kent's way is wrong, but maybe this is the 180 degree change that they needed. You know, their personalities seem quite different, and maybe that's what this locker room needed.
Defensively, I got 3 points here, Mike, that I want to touch upon that I think this team's got to do to get this victory over the Argo. It's rare this season that you and I have actually broken things down, offensive, defensive, in this preview, because there's not been a lot of good things to say. Yeah, they need to do this, but it's like it's always been protect the quarterback, run the football, don't allow big – like it was the same stuff, so we got sick of it, so we changed it up. But now that they're winning and they're doing some different things, and we can get back into this sort of thing. So the number one thing on my list, and I would imagine if you were doing the defense, this would be number one on yours, is stop James Wilder Jr. This guy has been a beast for the Argos the last two games. The numbers, 331 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns on, get this, 21 carries. That is a 15.8 yards per carry average. That is insane. The Ticats gave up 91 yards on the ground to Jeremiah Johnson against BC. So they're not – that's obviously a lot better than giving up 331 over two games, but they're susceptible to giving up some rush yards. So if Wilder gets going, I think it'll be a long day for the Ticats. So stopping him is key.
Yeah, that's huge. If you take the running game away from the Argonauts – you know, Ray's not gonna have a great game as to opposed if Wilder was running over everyone. So this kid has been tremendous since he's been the starter for the Argonauts. I believe he's a man on a mission to prove that he should be in the NFL, and I don't see him slowing down anytime soon.
No, the second point that I'm gonna bring up is they gotta keep the receivers in check. We talked about the great job this secondary and this defense did against BC. And they did a better job on Labor Day against the Argos as well than they did in the season opener. But to me, any wide receiving core that has SJ Green in it scares me to death. So if they can keep SJ, if SJ can have a Manny Arsenault type game that he had against the Ticats last week, I think the Ticats have a good shot to win this game.
Yeah, SJ Green has been a nightmare for the Ticats, whether he's been with the Alouettes or earlier in the season, as an Argonaut, the first game of the season, he just torched the Ticats. So, yeah, I got to keep him in check for sure.
And last, but certainly not least, the one thing we always talk about when it comes to playing a Ricky Ray team, you got to pressure him. Devon Coleman, he needs to meet that future Hall of Famer a few times in this game, and he needs to make number 15's life a living hell.
Absolutely. And I think we will get pressure on him. Lately, there's been some pressure from this front four and been pressure from the secondary when they blitz. So I believe that we can do the job and make Ricky Ray very uncomfortable in the pocket.
Yeah, we don't do bold predictions like we used to a couple years ago, but I'm going to say Nikita Whitlock meets Ricky Ray a couple of times in that backfield in this game. I think he's going to make his name again this week.
I like it. I like it.
All right, let's get back to what we do every week. CFL picks. Four games on the docket this week. Surprise, surprise. We have two doubleheaders, Friday and Saturday night. The first game of the week takes place in our nation's capital as the Ottawa Redblacks host the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Mike, who do you got in this one?
I gotta go with the Roughriders just because I don't know the quarterback situation on Ottawa, and I heard that both Drew Tate and Trevor Harris were throwing today. I'm not sure which one might start or if it's going to be Lindley again. So either way, I got to go with the Rough Riders.
Yeah, this is a tough one to pick simply because we don't know who's going to be under center for the Red Blacks. If it's Harris, I give Ottawa a much better chance to win. If it's Tate, I give them a slight that it's 50-50 because we know Drew Tate can look wonderful and then look awful. Very Jeremiah Mazzoli-like. If it's Ryan Lindley, the Red Blacks have no chance of winning this game. I don't think it's going to be Trevor Harris, so because of that, I too am going to take the Saskatchewan Roughriders to give the Ticats a helping hand by beating one of the teams they're chasing for a playoff spot. The second game of the Friday doubleheader, Mike, it's Montreal at Calgary. Do we even have to go into reasons why we're both picking the Stampeders?
No. Stamps all the way.
Yeah, Stamps. Yeah, we'll just move on to the next one, which is the first of Saturday's doubleheaders, which takes place right here in Hamilton. The Argos and the Ticats. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
Going with the Tabbies. They look good last week. Damn it. And so did the Argonauts, but I can't pick the Argonauts. I'm going with the Ticats.
Yeah, look, we're Ticats fans. We're taking the Ticats in this one. That should be no surprise to anyone. But I'll give a reason why. Toronto's never won in Hamilton. I thought Toronto went on Labor Day. I felt this season was such a train wreck that, of course, a streak like that where I think Toronto's now 0-8 in all games of all time played at Tim Hortons Field. I thought, oh, that'll end this year. Didn't happen. I think the Ticats riding high after a victory in BC. The Argos, you're right, did look very good against the Alouettes, but it's the Alouettes. And right now, they look worse than even the Ticats did earlier this season. They got nothing going on there in Montreal. Yes. So it's hard to really say, oh, they beat Montreal. They look good beating Montreal, but it's at home. I think these two teams are pretty evenly matched, to be honest with you. I know the Argos are in first place, but damn it, we're Ticats fans. I'm taking the Ticats. Moving on. Last game of the week. Pretty big one in Edmonton where you are, Mike. The Bombers come in to Commonwealth, take on the Eskimos, who have lost 5 in a row. Who do you got in this one, buddy?
I like the Bombers right now. I think they're up there in the top three teams, probably number two in the league right now, if I were doing power rankings. So I'll take the Bombers in a close game. I think Edmonton's going to put up a fight, but I think in the end, the Bombers will be victorious.
I like the Bombers as well. However, losers of 5 in a row. They had a bye week. It's at Commonwealth. I'm going to take the Eskimos in this one with the minor upset. Winnipeg's look great, but there's always something about Winnipeg that it's like, until they do it, like until I see them get to the West Final or a Grey Cup, I'm always going to be questionable about whether they can do it. Edmonton is maybe they weren't as good as their 7-0 start indicated. They're not as bad as their recent 0-5 run. I think the bye week does them a world of good. I think they come out in this one, they come out flying high. I think Darrell Walker's going to have a big game. I think Mike Riley's going to get back into that MOP conversation with a big performance. I like the Eskimos to take this one late Saturday at Commonwealth Stadium. Okay. Let's do some questions, Mike. We got three this week. The first one comes from who's starting to become a regular contributor to the show, Broccoli. He throws us a great question. He says, do you think Zach Caleros will get another shot at starting? And how short is Jeremiah Mazzoli's leash? This is an interesting question considering what you said earlier in the episode.
I don't think Claris is going to be starting the rest of this. Like, he's not going to be the starter for this season. I think Jeremiah Mazzoli is going to be the starter for the rest of the season, and then we'll have to go from there because it's going to get very sticky in the offseason because Mazzoli's a free agent. Claris is going to be the highest paid player in the league, as far as I know, at around close to $500,000, $550,000, something like that. So this is going to be a very interesting situation to see how this plays out for the rest of the season, because they're going to have a very big decision to make at the end of the season. But I see Mazzoli starting all of the games left in this season.
So there's obviously two parts to this question. I'll answer the first one first, then we'll go to the – although you've kind of answered the Jeremiah Mazzoli leash question, so I guess I can answer both here. I'm usually – I'll start off by saying 1,000% wrong when people ask for these predictions. So I would like to see Zach get another shot at starting this season, only because I would love to see what he could do in this offense with an offensive line that would give him time, with a running game that actually exists. It's not about – wanting Mazzoli out more than seeing what could Zach Caleros do if he's given time to make those reads, because we know what he can do when he's playing at his best, when the offense is clicking. We saw it 2 years ago. That player is still there. So I would like to see what he could do. So I'm going to say he's not going to get back in as a starter, hoping that I'm wrong. Like, and again, it's not anything against Mazzoli. I see how this team is operating. I'd like to see what Zach could do with all these parts that have now coalesced around the team since Jones has been around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Caleros in a pocket that lasts more than a half second can do some damage. I'm convinced he's still a top quarterback in this league if he has, you know, the pieces around him, if he has time to throw the ball. So, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm interested to see what he would look like in this offense, but I think we should just ride Mazzoli from here on out.
Well, and that's what comes to the second point. How short is Jeremiah Mazzoli's leash? And as far as that's concerned, I think as long as this team keeps winning, he's going to keep playing. I think Jones is somewhat tethered to Mazzoli because his first big decision as coach when it comes to the on-field product was Jeremiah is our starter. So he's kind of tethered to him, similarly to how Austin was tethered to Zach Caleros. So unless the wheels completely fall off with Mazzoli at quarterback, like they lose, like they go into this game against the Argos and lose like 53-4, then I don't think we're going to see, like, I don't think his leash is short. I think he's going to keep playing as long as the team's playing reasonably well and winning football games. But I will say that I think that the drive at the end of the first half on Friday night saved Mazzoli from taking a seat on the bench in this past game. I don't think he was great in the first half. He was awesome in the second half, but I don't think he was great in the first half. But then he drove them into field goal range on that last drive going into halftime. And I do kind of think, and I was sitting here because I was watching it by myself because it's late at night and everyone's asleep. And basically, I basically sat up and watched the game with people on Twitter because it was so late. But I think had that drive failed to produce any points, or if it would have been a quick two and out, I wouldn't have been shocked to see Zach enter the game in the second half. But that didn't happen. They drove, got the field goal, tied the game, went on to win the game. So I think as long as the Ticats keep competing and keep winning, because we can talk about how bad they looked against Saskatchewan, but it came down to the last play of the game before that game was actually over. So they're 3-1 since Jones took over. They're 3-1 since Mazzoli's been the starter. And they've been in every game they've played. So that's not something we said early in the season. So I think as long as this team is competing and winning football games, I don't think Mazzoli sees the bench anytime soon.
No, neither do I. And I think that they're implementing an offense that complements Mazzoli. So they're putting in an offense that is more for Mazzoli than it would be for Caleros. You know, they script running plays here and there, and I don't think you're going to see Caleros run the ball too often. He's more of a pocket quarterback now, especially after that knee injury. So, yeah, I think they're going to be riding Mazzoli the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think you're right on that as well. So I don't think we're going to see Zach play, and that's unfortunate because, I, like I said, I'd love to see what he could do here. But if the team keeps winning, then I'm a happy fan. I'm sure you are as well. Now I'm going to throw to you because you got two questions this week in the rare instance. This is how it used to be. Mike used to get all the questions, and I would sit and react to them, and it's been a while since that's happened. But, Mike, you got a couple of questions this past week, so why don't you throw them out there?
All right, the first one comes from at Tony M. Cola. If you could swap four players for four players on any other team, who would they be and what team?
Okay, this was a tough one because there's a lot of good players out there. There's a lot of good players in this team, so it was tough. In full disclosure, I did this as Mike and I were discussing the show off the top before we recorded. So if you don't mind, I'd like to take the lead on this. And I picked the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as my team, as much as I said earlier that I don't really trust them. That team is loaded with talent. And I took a lot of guys off their defense because their defense is phenomenal. So I started with by taking Mo Leggett, and swapping him with Dominique Ellis. I think Ellis has played very well when he came back to this team. I think Kariel Brooks has played very well in his absence, but Mo Leggett is the best Sam linebacker in the CFL. To get him on this defense with his ball hawking abilities would be tremendous. Secondly, I grabbed Taylor Loeffler, who is the best Canadian safety in the game right now. No doubt about it. I swapped him with Don Unamba. Mike can attest. I said, oh, it's not really fair for me to take an American and swap him with a Canadian. But then, Mike, what did you say to me?
I said, you don't have to be fair. Come on. This is just fantasy land.
So in my fantasy land, Loeffler plays safety. We kick Courtney Steven out to the wide side corner. And look at that. We've added Mo Leggett and Taylor Loeffler to this defense. So far, it's looking pretty good. Third player added was also defensively. I took TJ Heath. And I swapped him with Abdul Kanne. We haven't seen a bunch of Kanne, so you get a healthy body in Heath, who's one of the league's best ball hawks, along with Mo Leggett. Swap him out for a guy who's not playing. All of a sudden, you got Mo Leggett, Taylor Loeffler, TJ Heath in that secondary with Courtney Steven, with Richard Leonard, with Emmanuel Davis. Suddenly, that's a ball hawking unit, and I love it. And last but certainly not least, I picked Darvin Adams and a swap with Jalen Saunders. As much as I love Jalen Saunders and have been so happy to see him contribute to this team, Darvin Adams is pretty much just as fast as he is. He's a great deep threat, but he's also like 5 inches taller. And the one thing that this receiving corps in Hamilton needs is height. So you swap out a speedy guy for a speedy guy, but you gain some height. So Darvin Adams was my fourth. So that was Leggett, Loeffler, Heath, and Adams that I took from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in exchange for Ellis, Unamba, Kanne, and Saunders. So, Michael, throw it to you. What team did you pick, and who are your four?
I went with the model franchise in the league right now, the Calgary Stampeders. My first swap, it might be a little shocking, I went Caleros for Mitchell. Just because of the situation around Caleros, not uncertain about his future with the team. You know, if you could bring in, I'm not a huge Bo Levi Mitchell fan, you know, how do I put this, personality-wise maybe, I don't know. But on the field, he, you know, he just wins. And we know that it's a team game, but damn it, when he's at quarterback, you know, I mean, you just looked at the Calgary Stampeders record the past two seasons, it's been crazy. So Caleros for Mitchell, I got Gable for Messam. I love Gable. I think that he's been great, but his time might be coming to an end here. I got Mike Jones for Lamar Durant. Jones hasn't showed much. We talked about him earlier. Lamar Durant, I think, has a ton of potential. He's shown a little bit of magic when he's got a chance to get in there and make some plays, so Jones for Durant. And then even though I'm very high on Altman, I got Altman for Finch. I just think Finch is probably the best return man right now in the league.
It's funny because you took those four guys from Calgary, and I could make a claim for four other guys in Calgary. That's how good that team is. Like, you didn't mention Alex Singleton. You didn't mention Charleston Hughes. Like, there are so many talented players in the Stamps roster that it's kind of no wonder they're the envy of the league. No wonder they're, what, 10-1-1, 11-1-1 right now? Like, it's no surprise that they're as good as they are because that team is absolutely loaded. So those are four good picks. I think we built ourselves quite the good team here in Hamilton if we make those moves.
Yeah, not too shabby, my friend. Next one comes from at Adam Young, 329. Is Castillo still your special team's most outstanding player?
Yes. Your answer?
yes, as well. You know, he missed two in this game, but he bounced back, and he's just been great all year. He's still the guy.
If the season ends with him, he's missed four field goals so far. If this season ends with him missing six field goals, that's still an amazing season for a kicker. He's going to be well above 85% with those numbers, so he had a rough first half, a rough first couple of kicks, really, because he did nail the 53-yarder going to halftime. Kickers are going to go through these slumps, but he bounced back in game, and that to me is really impressive.
Yeah, it could have went south for him. I think Drew had a story on Three Down Nation that he called his girlfriend at halftime, and his girlfriend, you know, kind of straightened him out, and he came back in the second half. He made that long field goal at the end of the first half, but he got the pep talk at halftime. And thank you for that, Castillo's girlfriend, and he came out and did a great job. So, you know, it's not how you it's how many times you get back up, right?
To the old Razor Ramon saying, it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how many times you get back up. So absolutely agree with you there, Mike. So that's the show for this week, everybody. You can subscribe to our lovely little podcast here on all the many podcast places, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or you can always go to 3downnation.com and listen to it or download it there. And if you want to hit us up with some questions, Mike's getting tagged with some Twitter questions. Hopefully those keep coming in the over the next few weeks as this season starts to wind down. Mike, give them your Twitter handle so they know where to find you.
Mike_Ticats.
And if you want to give me the questions, you can always find me at JoshSmith_82. And you can always post your questions in the comments section under the podcast at 3downnation.com. So that was episode 89. I guess that's the Jalen Saunders episode of Podskewy, Mike. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.